Sex work exists at a curious intersection in our culture, simultaneously hyper-visible in media and invisible in meaningful policy discussions. In Playing the Whore, Melissa Gira Grant delivers a powerful corrective to conventional narratives, turning the analytical lens away from sex workers themselves and toward the systems that control, police, and define them. This isn't a book about why people sell sex or whether they should. It's about how society manufactures the category of prostitute and the real-world consequences of that construction. What if our greatest concern wasn't the existence of commercial sex, but rather the violence inflicted on those who provide it? What if the greatest threat to sex workers isn't their work, but those who claim to protect, study, or save them? In Fargo, North Dakota, police stage hotel stings that mirror amateur pornography scenes. Officers arrange meetings with suspected sex workers before backup storms in with weapons drawn. These videos, published as evidence, show how law enforcement transforms women into prostitutes through their interventions. This pattern exists worldwide. New York's street workers face daily harassment, Greece conducts forced HIV testing, and China holds public shame parades of arrested women. Such violence persists because society accepts brutality against certain women to supposedly protect others. Sex workers are primarily known through surveillance, not their own voices. Grant uses Jane Fonda's role in Clute, where the protagonist is first heard through secret recordings, to illustrate how sex workers are typically viewed through outsiders' lens. Online advertising offers more work autonomy, but increases surveillance risks, as police use these platforms for stings and databases. Yet most workers find digital advertising's benefits outweigh its dangers. The policing affects beyond active sex workers. Transgender women, especially women of color and queer youth, face constant profiling, exemplified by a Latina woman arrested after police found condoms in her bra while she was simply buying food. Sex workers are presumed guilty by default, with marginalized groups bearing the heaviest burden. The evolution from prostitute to sex worker marks a pivotal shift from viewing commercial sex as an identity to recognizing it as labor, challenging centuries of social control. The term prostitute emerged in 16th century English as a verb. Ancient societies like Babylon and Pompeii had no equivalent concept. The modern identity was constructed in the 19th century, transforming occasional behaviors into fixed categories controlled by law, similar to the invention of the homosexual. Carol Lee coined sex work in 1978, challenging the dehumanizing phrase sex use industry at a feminist conference. Many feminists resisted acknowledging sex workers' agency, favoring rehabilitation over recognizing their capacity for self-organization. The term sex worker gained strongest acceptance through AIDS activism, where workers rejected being labeled as disease vectors. Yet, despite this progress, sex workers still face pressure to share their stories for others' benefit. As Anne McClintock noted, public disclosure often leads to self-incrimination. Sex workers face a critical paradox. Sharing safety information is often criminalized more severely than sex work itself. When Grant received an inquiry about entering sex work, her concerns stemmed not some moral issues, but from legal risks of sharing such information. Legal requirements like signing no sex contracts with clients create unsafe conditions by preventing honest communication. In some jurisdictions, carrying condoms can serve as evidence of prostitution, forcing workers to choose between legal and physical safety. These legal risks, not shame, explain sex workers' selective silence about their experiences. Their stories often become performative, with audiences masking voyeurism as concern. Many choose silence as resistance until conditions improve. Public debates about sex work typically devolve into spectacle, drawing audiences with crisis narratives while promising moral clarity. These discussions rarely address workers' actual concerns, instead fixating on false binaries of exploitation versus empowerment. The sex industry encompasses diverse labor forms that adapt to social and economic contexts, from mining town saloons to keycard-accessed business hotels. Rather than street corners, commercial sex now integrates seamlessly into service and leisure industries. Sex workers have evolved with gentrification, developing internet-based businesses and independent networks. This convergence with mainstream industries represents an economic evolution rather than the moral crisis reformers claim. Workplaces span suburban BDSM houses, college town escort agencies, transgender performers' online platforms, and home-based porn production. These operate as organized workplaces with established systems and protocols. Commercial venues function like typical service businesses, complete with staff meetings, schedules, and commission structures. Many workers diversify their income streams across different forms of sex work to balance earnings and privacy. Red light districts serve as spaces where class boundaries blur through human contact. In areas like San Francisco's North Beach, adult businesses coexist with mainstream establishments, allowing sex workers to maintain both visibility and anonymity in their community. Sex worker feminists identified whore stigma as a concept affecting all women, showing why no universal female class exists. This stigma targets illegitimate femaleness and violates what Jill Nagel terms compulsory virtue, the mandate to both be and appear virtuous. The concept's dilution into slut-shaming has shifted focus away from those most harmed. As the author states, if woman is other, whore is the other's other. Western saviors like Nicholas Kristof position themselves as sex work experts while spreading harmful narratives. Using his New York Times credentials, Kristof conducted brothel raids in Cambodia, live-tweeting about scared, underage rape victims without consent, echoing the sensationalist white slave trade exposés of the past century. Some feminist spaces embrace this control through carceral feminism, celebrating male clients' arrests while criminalizing women under the pretext of providing services. This approach treats sex workers as objects requiring control, rather than workers deserving rights. "When prostitutes win, all women win," declared Black Women for Wages for Housework in 1977, linking sex worker rights to broader feminist struggles. The author highlights how sex workers and housewives, once seen as class allies but now viewed as rivals, are both undermined by systems of male dependency. U.S. policies demanding Cambodia eradicate prostitution led to violent crackdowns and illegal detention of sex workers. When Cambodia demonstrated compliance through detention and violence, the State Department upgraded their ranking, revealing they equated eliminating sex work with eliminating sex workers themselves. The movement responded creatively, using streetwalker chic fashion shows to protest U.S. foreign aid restrictions. Sex workers also shared their expertise in street medicine, harm reduction, and jail support with movements like Occupy Wall Street. True progress requires solidarity, not just support, focusing on those with power to change conditions rather than scrutinizing sex workers' choices. Critics should examine how their own institutions harm sex workers instead of fixating on sex workers' behavior. While decriminalization would empower sex workers to better help themselves and others, change needn't wait for stigma to disappear. Justice begins with dismantling oppressive systems, not rescuing individuals.